To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
Pinot Noir, it's not going to knock your socks off, but it's going to seduce you. It's going to slip your socks off.
When you've got the basic fruit intensity in the wine itself, they're the wines that are going to age very well.
For my family, Moscato is in our DNA.
It is only Barbera, this wine. Why it is so expensive? Because it's very good wine.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 256. This week we feature Elias Fernandez of Schaefer Vineyards in Napa Valley.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Some of the best-known Napa Valley brands have been created by Schaefer Vineyards. Labels such as 1.5, Red Shoulder Ranch Chardonnay, and especially Hillside Select are household names to wine lovers. But maybe the best label to describe Schaefer winemaker Elias Fernandez is Relentless. After 33 vintages, he works to create some really fantastic wines. We met up with Elias a few weeks ago at the winery to talk about his career, the fires, and best of all, his new wines. This is a real thrill for me. For the longest time, I have wanted to interview Elias Fernandez, and he couldn't make it today, but we've got this other guy by the name of Elias Fernandez here, who happens to be the winemaker at Schaefer Vineyards. How are you doing, Elias?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. I'm very excited to be here because you make some awesome wine, and you're truly a humble guy, and people love what you do. That's got to be, geez, are you living a dream or what?
Oh, of course. It's a rewarding job and that people, love our wine, and I'm fortunate enough to be part of that. So,
well, let's kind of go back a little bit. How long have you been the winemaker? I know you were working with Doug originally.
So. Yeah, so I just finished my 33rd harvest here, so a few harvests, but since 1990, I became co-winemaker with Doug, and then in 94, he decided it was time for him to run the whole company, and it was time for me to just run the whole winemaking production end of it, so.
33 harvests.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
You're like 29, man.
Well, if you drink a lot of red wine, it preserves you.
That's impressive. Not a lot of winemakers have that kind of pedigree.
Yeah, well, it's been a ride. It's been a fun one, and it's no regrets.
Well, a lot of work in between there too. I mean, obviously things weren't quite as easy, I'm sure, in the beginning, and the way the winery started and all that, you had a long road.
Oh yeah, it's a learning process. It's just like life, you start somewhere and you end up somewhere else, and hopefully it's for the better.
Yeah. And you've continued to bring up little new projects along the way, which is kind of neat as well.
Yeah, we always have something in the works.
That's true. We have something new you just released this year. Let's talk about that wine from there, and we'll kind of work our way backwards.
Perfect.
What's the name of the new wine again?
So the new wine is called TD9. So it's a tribute really to John Schaefer, our founder. His bold move in the 70s coming out to Napa Valley, not knowing really anything about growing grapes or wine, and bringing his family out here from Chicago and landing here where the estate is today in the Stag's Leap district, and just learning how to grow grapes, and his first implement in the field was a TD9 tractor, and so such as the name TD9 is what the name of the wine is, and it's basically a Bordeaux blend of Merlot, Cabernet, and Malbec.
That's got to be pretty cool to look back to have that sort of, you know, tribute to the past.
Right. No, that definitely is. Without John making that move, I probably wouldn't be here and, you know, wouldn't have had the success that I have. So
it's a crazy thought to think about Napa Valley without Schaefer. It's such an important part of the valley.
Yeah, it's part of the 70s for sure, you know, is the beginnings of the valley. You know, we had the, you know, maybe four or five wineries, and then the 70s it kind of exploded a little bit, and then the 80s and then 90s, and today, you know what it looks like.
I made the joke when we started the interview, you're the third of three interviews with Schaefer. Years ago we interviewed John, then we interviewed Doug, and you're kind of the crown in the, you know, the finality of this. But in the end, I mean, that's the three of you, with a lot of people, of course, helping, creating this incredible vineyard. That's really amazing.
Yeah, we call each other the three amigos. Yeah, basically, you know, John founded the place. Doug and I, he allowed us to work here. And, you know, we together forged the path for Schaefer.
Considering how long you've been doing that, I mean, do you still have that feeling going to work every day? You know, this is really, what I do is pretty cool. I'm very lucky.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have time to reflect because I'm always looking, you know, thinking just about the current wines and what's going on. But, you know, someday I'll look back and go, wow, that was pretty cool, though.
Yeah, 33 vintages. I mean, that's, while it's not a hugely high number in wine life, it really is something.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you do anything on the side at all for yourself, your own wine?
Well, actually, Doug Schaefer and I started a different brand. It's called the 84 Wines. 84 Wines is the brand name. It's a tribute to 1984 when both he and I started working together here at Schaefer. And so, you know, that is a fun project because it allows us to actually feel like we were back in the early days discovering, experimenting, and so we've, you know, come out with three varieties that are not made under the Schaefer label, an Albarino, a Malbec, and a Petit Syrah. So
yeah, Albarino is not something you see around here.
No.
That's pretty cool. Is that, how did it come about? I mean, was it just kind of one of those, gee, I'd like to try something new?
Well, Doug and I one day were, you know, been here 30-something years, and we were talking, and he said, well, you know, wouldn't it be fun to make another varietal? And then we thought, well, if we only make 200 cases of it, and the way Schaefer is known, everybody's going to want it, and it might be a bad thing for the brand of Schaefer. So we thought, well, why don't we start another brand where we can make these 200 case lots and stuff, and it's just separate from Schaefer and, you know, and fun. So, yeah.
That's pretty neat. It's, what a great idea. Not only that's a little fun for you because you could probably take it wherever you want to go, right?
Right, right. And it rejuvenates the juices.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I want to tackle the subject of the fire. We don't need to go deep into it here, but for your situation here, I'm sure you were pretty scared, both for your own family, the Schaefers here, your co-workers, and of course the winery. This is your livelihood, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely a time to reflect and just on how lucky we are. I live in Calistoga, so I was in the midst of really close fire, and then here in the Stagsleep District, and you know, above Atlas Peak, fire came through at Schaefer. So between both of them, I was getting on both ends. So we were fortunate, you know, we didn't lose any buildings or houses, or none of our employees did. So we're fortunate in that way. Some of our neighbors are not as lucky, and we hope that they can come back and, you know, stronger from it, but we feel really fortunate.
Lucky, nice, glad to hear that. So there was no major damage here anywhere in the property?
No, I don't know if you're aware, but back in 1981, there was an Atlas Peak fire.
That was the one Doug wrote about in the book, right?
Right, yeah. And we have a wine named Firebreak because of that fire.
Right.
So we had some experience with it, you know. So that helped a little bit. You know, we knew how it was going to come down and so forth. So, and we're surrounded by vineyards. So the vineyards were fire breaks. So, yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. Mother Nature doing its thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I remember reading that in the book. Yeah. I remember Doug saying something about the animals come running down off the hill and you saw pretty much one of everything, something like that.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you run into any of that this time?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we saw a lot of little critters running around, you know, off the hills, but nothing major.
So many aspects to this. So how far were you in your pick for Harvest? Because again, for our listeners, this just at the back end.
Yeah, so we were about 99% done, and so we're in good shape. Some people weren't as fortunate, you know, that way, but 99% done is pretty good in a situation like that. We left a little bit of fruit out, and I actually donated it to UC Davis so they could do research for the future on this, because there's so much unknown about smoke, taint, and so forth. But, you know, the vintage shouldn't be stamped with it being a smoke-tainted vintage. It won't be that way. There's so many, very little grapes out, really, when this happened. So
it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, what about 2017? How's your vintage looking?
Yeah, so I just got through tasting some of the wines yesterday. Great color, great extract, right in line of what we've been seeing. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 are all going to be pretty awesome.
Some amazing vintages.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of good stuff to choose from.
Yeah. I guess there was a little bit of price to pay with the fire and the earthquake and the other things.
Right. In between.
Maybe that's a bad way to put it.
Yeah.
As you look to the future with Schaefer, I mean, you've created one new label.
Right.
Do you see that within the Schaefer name to expand a little bit more as time goes on?
Products under Schaefer.
Products under Schaefer, yeah.
At this point, TD9 is our newest, venture, so we're trying to fine-tune that. The door is always open. We're pretty much a red wine house here, so I don't see another white wine, but I won't say no, but, for the Schaefer brand. But you never know about another red.
No SB, huh? Kind of always hoped you guys would do that one.
Yeah.
This is kind of a loaded question, but what do you like to drink? And that's broad, anything.
Oh, yeah. I always like to start out with some form of champagne, whether it's California sparkling, or European, rosé sparkling, champagne like Biacart or something like that. I always love starting out that way. Then, usually we'll go into some an Albarino or something white and interesting, different. A dry Riesling sometimes, I'll enjoy. So, and then reds, I really like Gamay Noir. I'm a real fan of Gamay, Beaujolais, but the bigger styles, the heartier styles. I think that they're underrated wines. Things like that.
Interesting hearing you talk about Riesling. That's another one. Jeez, it'd be cool if you guys did a Riesling.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I'm making suggestions.
Yeah, I know. And you can drink all 200 cases of it.
Okay. We got life one more time has returned to us.
There you go.
The Rieslings you drink, are we talking about domestic ones? Or are we talking about European ones?
Both. I'll try anything, Yeah. I'm not a real stickler on just California or whatever, I've always loved wine in general. Just, it's a different profiles of flavors, from a European than here, even within the California, Sonoma Coast, Napa Valley. So.
Were you raised in a wine drinking family?
Not really. I was raised in an agricultural family, but not really wine per se drinking. I didn't really drink my first wine until I was, probably in college, when I got into the program.
Really?
Yeah.
So how did you go into the program? I'm talking, assume UC Davis is
right. Right, right.
So when you did that, was it the purpose for specifically wine or was it just
So my first year actually out of high school, I went to University of Nevada, Reno on a music scholarship. Didn't know what I wanted to do and stuff. But then after a year, I figured out I really didn't want to do music as a career long term. Too many starving musicians and stuff like that. But I was really good at math and sciences. And again, I grew up here in Napa Valley and agriculture, so I knew a little bit about growing grapes and picking walnuts and prunes and all that stuff that was going on at the time, back in the 70s and early 80s. And so I got a Fulbright scholarship to University of Nevada, Reno on music. I went there for a year, said I need to find really seriously what I need to do. Really good at math and sciences. So I heard about the wine program at UC Davis. I was there the weekend before school was going to start. Got my books. One of the books was The Wines of the World at the time. Started reading it, and it had a whole historical thing on wine, you know, back to the Egyptians where they found wine that had been made. And so it really interested me because it showed that wine was just not just wine. It actually has history with it, and the history and the science and all that stuff just really captured me. So I was reading the book, and I actually read it the whole weekend, the whole book for the whole, wow. the whole quarter, because it was so intriguing, you know. And then once I really got into the science of wine, and you know, my upper division classes 2 years later, I just fell in love with it. I said, I found what my passion. I found what I want to do.
So, yeah, nice. That's, yeah, you know, not everybody can say that.
I know, but it was nice.
Yeah. So what do you play?
I used to play jazz trumpet.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Trumpet?
Yeah.
Do you still play?
Yeah. No, not anymore. My music's in my wine now.
Lip is gone, right? That's a good way to put it. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's interesting, this idea of becoming a professional musician. You didn't choose easy paths either way, did you?
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of similarities. I mean, great musicians have internal feeling. They feel stuff. Same thing with winemaking. You actually have to go with your gut sometimes, and your gut feels and stuff like that. So there's a lot of similarities. So the transition was fairly easy.
And the math thing is a big part of music too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I'm really curious. I didn't know you grew up here in Napa, so I'm kind of curious. Were you one of those kids that, you know, growing up in Napa, geez, I'd like to go somewhere else? Did you have that in your head?
Well, I needed to go to college. I knew I needed to get out and stuff and see what was going on. But then when I got into wine, I said, no, I need to stay here, and you know, and I discovered that actually the valley was bigger than I had thought, and that there was much more here than just, you know, as a young kid, you don't go to fancy restaurants, you don't eat, you don't drink wine and stuff like that. There's really not much to do, except for sports, and I was in sports and stuff like that. But as when I came back, I discovered that Napa Valley actually was the food and wine scene, and, you know, Mecca. So that was kind of neat.
I think that's the idea of sort of looking from the outside in. Just, you know, you don't know that because this is where you grew up at your home. You don't think about how other people see it, right?
Right, right, right. I hear it from other people, and I go, oh, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. So I do, I mean, I do live in a really cool place. I mean, I've traveled and stuff, but, you know, when I come and I go, wow, this valley is really beautiful. Yeah.
So, it really is. You're a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know everybody's talking about the idea of people coming back. Give me your thoughts on that, to the valley to visit.
Right. Yeah, it's so important. The valley, you know, the media made it looked out there like the whole valley had burned down and stuff like that. Yes, people are affected and there's areas and so forth, but overall the valley is still here. The restaurants, the hotels, the wineries, they have employees that actually live and work at these places that they need people coming in so they don't get laid off or whatever because of lack of work for them. So it's important that, you know, those that love wine to come back to the valley and, you know, seek us out.
It's not the glamour of the Napa Valley. It's the simple fact that you make a living this way like so many other people from every walk of life.
Right, right. Yeah. There's so many people that go into making one bottle of wine. I mean, just from the laborers in the field that, you know, they get paid by the wineries to, you know, to the people that we buy glass from, you know, and so forth. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of tentacles out there. Yeah. And in the end, coming here, for me, while I see the damage, it's nowhere near what I expected.
Right.
Because, of course, when you get smoke in the air, how that spreads. But it's still the beautiful Napa Valley.
That's right. Yeah, the grass has started growing. We've gotten our first rains. So the hills are turning green again.
I know this is the craziest question to ask you, but you probably don't really give any thought at this moment to next year's vintage, do you? Or is that just how your brain works? You're thinking a little ahead.
Oh, we always do. I mean, right now I'm working on bottling for next year. I'm planning with our vineyard manager on what we're going to replant and, you know, plant. So we're always looking into the future. Yeah, for sure.
Never occurred to me as a winemaker, you really are kind of a time traveler, aren't you? I
mean, you have to be. Yeah, you don't look too much backwards, but you always look forward.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Elias, for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you and Schaefer Vineyards, how would they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, you know, www.schaefervineyards.com, and all the info is there.
Right. And to come visit here, people would have to call. This is by appointment.
Yeah, we're by appointment only, Monday through Friday. A lot of people try to make appointments on the weekends, and unfortunately we're not open on the weekends. We're fortunate that way. So Monday through Friday, and you know, you're welcome to come in, to walk in, to purchase wine, but to taste, sit down and taste, you need to make an appointment. Yeah.
Excellent. And well worth just to come and see as you drive up the drive. This is one of the most beautiful parts of Napa Valley.
Yeah, definitely. It's 1984 when I drove up that driveway, I said the same thing.
That must be pretty crazy to say that. Elias, this is great. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I wish you continued success.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Cheers.
Learn more by visiting SchaeferVineyards.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.